There's a particular aura to Dan Really Likes Wine this week, as basically the Kardashian of the English wine industry waltzes in to join us on the show with an armada of agents and bodyguards. He's a big name in English wine and a hugely successful one, because not only does he add so much light and a delight to the wine industry as a whole, but he's one of the great educators on wine and has put so many people down the road to drinking, understanding and enjoying great wine. It is an enormous pleasure, Jimmy, to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. What an accolade list there. That was fantastic. Can you announce me into every room that I walk into? It'd be great.
I can do, as long as I don't have to do it with your CV and list of businesses, because that would be a 45-minute process.
Yes, it's something that's quite complex about having all these businesses. But like I said in the green room before, it's fantastic to try and build all these businesses, but I need to rein myself in a little bit.
Well, I think those of us beyond your businesses are quite happy if you don't, because you offer so much to so many people, all of which comes from what is clearly a mad keen love of wine and everything that it embodies. So many of the guests we have on the show find themselves in wine by accident. It's not I was aged 7 and I always dreamt of being a sommelier. What was your road into wine? What was the wine that flipped the switch and made you realize this is where I want to be?
Road into wine was quintessentially rebelling against my parents, which is
mightily good a reason as any.
I think that's certainly the rebel within me. And that was because my parents were teetotal. So if you don't know what that means, that they were not drinkers. And there was no alcohol on the table, the dinner table. You know, and it's crazy that I say that out loud, because, of course, it's a massive part. It's a massive feature of my table day with my family. But it was there was nothing like that. So there was no cabinet to raid. You know, there was no gin bottle to empty and then replace with water, as many kids did in their heydays.
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about, Jimmy.
sorry if I've just ruined a lot of relationships between parents and kids there. It was one of those things where I wanted to really find what I was doing. But my parents wanted me to be in the Royal Navy as a mechanical engineer. And you need real good grades, physics, maths, A's. I got very low on that spectrum. We won't go into the details of that. It might be something to do with, finding girls and et cetera. And I ended up going to university, but switching on the second day just by going to the Faculty of Geography and Geology to do those courses. And that suddenly really instilled an interest into the kind of behind the scenes, soils, etc. And in my gap year just before that, I got into wine by working in a wine shop in the UK, a big sort of multi-liquor store chain, what we call off licenses in the UK. And they got me through WSET level 2, level 3, and I got my 19th birthday, I got my level 3, which was quite young, but I was told I had a good palate. I had no idea what that meant. And I just rolled with it. So that sort of set me up on that moment in time to sort of progress this. And my parents didn't know that I switched at university, right?
Do they know yet? Is this podcast going to be a surprise?
They claimed it was 2 months down the line, they figured it out. But I think it was a bit later than that was my kind of real starting point. I then opened wine shops for that big company, became the head of education. They went bust, nothing to do with me. And then I set up my first wine school, which was my first business. And that was in 2008 to 2009, which is West London Wine School. So that's where that went. The wine that did it was the second part of your question, was actually just before I worked in a wine shop. I worked in an Italian restaurant, and they came in, did a tasting, the supplier, and the wine was a Brunello di Montalcino. It was a Poggione. And it's not because I was like, wow, this is the best wine I've ever tried, but everybody there, I was picking up notes, and they were very honest notes. I think if I look back at it today, and I don't have those notes anymore, but I'll be like mortified what I was writing. But the person...
Tastes nice.
Yes, exactly.
Looks rich.
Smiley face. So then, they said that these are all really good comments to make. And I'm not sure if they were just trying to sort of help me along on my path, and that would be a lovely thing if they were, but I think I might have hit something right, and that kind of fueled me to do that a bit further. So that would be in a Tuscan red. amazingly, but I've come a long way from there today.
That was the start of your wine education, and having successfully run your employer's business into the ground, it opened your opportunity up.
Thanks.
And created what's now become such a big part of what you do. And wine education, I think, is something we often approach maybe a little bit incorrectly, certainly in South Africa, where we think, well, that must mean you understand what malolactic fermentation means and you understand what acid levels are. And those are all important in the winemaking process. But for me, the art of education in wine is getting people to feel comfortable with what they're drinking, getting them to look at a wine and go, yeah, you know what, that's something I'm happy to try. Mm-hmm. And that comes across in so much of what you do, especially the online stuff. It's a very engaging way in which you have about wine, not the, well, I know more about you and you'd better listen to everything I say, but more, well, come on in, let's talk about it, share it, and together find a way to enjoy this glass, enjoy this bottle.
Well, I try to let everyone know what I know and bore them senseless, but it doesn't work. But no, thank you for saying those kind words. It's very important to connect, because as you mentioned, in the world of wine, and this is other disciplines as well, you can have all of the information in your brain or as much as you can cram in as possible. But being able to communicate that is something that you you really need to fine tune. The delivery is important. Eliminating certain parts of your, you know, it may be pauses, speaking slowly, and connecting with your audience. My audience is global, as you mentioned. It goes around the world. And I think it's super important to be able to connect with those people, to try and make it fun, to not take it so seriously. I've tried to do a lot of analogies and anecdotes to help people remember key facts. And I think it's fun. I mean, you can be so boring about anything in the world of wine or anything in the world, but it's trying to put a human touch on it and trying to make it a little bit fun.
If we remember back to any of our school days, the teachers we tend to remember were the ones who did exactly that. They brought a subject to life. Mm-hmm. And when you can do that, you've got so much more of a chance of actually connecting and having an impact. So what are a couple of keys? Somebody's listening to this at the moment. We're just getting into wine. We want to learn more about it. What are a couple of the cornerstones of starting your wine journey for you? Not because you must know this, otherwise you cannot drink wine. Mm-hmm. But if you do know this, your appreciation and understanding is going to be so much better.
Yeah, I think number one is listening. It's very, very important. So if you can go to tastings, make sure you are attending tastings like this fantastic fair that we're at, around the world supplier events, and you can attend those and listen and talk to people, then you're going to build a relationship base, which is really important. And those people could become a part of your journey, share the journey, or in some instances, become mentors. I get so many people approach me about, how can I take that next step? How can I make it from being just working my day job into wine? And we're more than happy to help. I'm more than happy to try and connect people about those things. So I think it's about sort of getting yourself out there. In terms of the knowledge side of things, what things you could adopt, taking a core central course that gives you the foundation is very important. And there are many, many out there. Gaining that foundation, but then not having the fear or the anxiety to sort of fly away from that, because we can talk about, is it okay if I talk about courses, specific courses?
Please do.
WSET, for example.
It's a great course.
Worldwide, the sort of main pillar of wine education globally. Gold standard, fantastic, but very formulaic. And if we stay within that box, you might not know many people. You might sort of stray away from what's fun and what's engaging. You know, you don't want to be waltzing up to someone at a stand and go, yeah, this wine is medium plus acid. You know, but you want to start to talk a bit more of a relationship around that and kind of be a bit more fun around it. So I think it's giving yourself the foundation that gives you the confidence to be able to connect, and then finding, I think, your little bit of speciality in the world of wine as well, which might be further education, but it might be production. It could be something like sales. If you're great at relationships, for example, if you're really not great at relationships, maybe you just want to work in a deep, dark cellar, you know, and the door is closed upon you sort of thing.
Or, of course, just if you really want to know a bit more about wine, enjoy it and drink it, which we do very
in moderation,
happily.
Sorry.
And some of that wine could be wine which forms another part of what you do, because you also have a winery, Mr. Smith.
I do, yes. It's the latest part of... I don't want to call it an empire. It's the latest part of the business that we've set up. So I have the main wine school that I mentioned, which I established 17 years ago. A small wine shop as well, a wine bar in London. And then we have Wine with Jimmy, which was a COVID baby when we were all pivoting. Do you remember that episode in Friends? With Ross Geller and the sofa. Pivot. Whenever I hear that word. So we're all pivoting, and I created Wine with Jimmy at that time. But the recent business is the winery. So that was established in 2022. It's in the Surrey Hills, so on the Surrey-Sussex border. And the whole ethos of that is to make authentic English wine in a low intervention way. And that is... a lot of jargon words right there, but I want to make wines that taste English. For me, England is an island built by the sea and constantly shaped by the sea. And you know from your background that, you know, weather comes in sideways from the westerly. You know, we've got a lot of cold conditions, wet conditions, but we have a lot of that sort of limestone, chalks and clays. And I want my wines to be representative of that. And I love that in wine, about being true to place.
It's not that long ago that English wine was, if not an object of mirth, certainly not taken terribly seriously, often made out of nettles, and certainly not something that was going to take the world by storm.
It's kind of Wicker Man stuff, right?
Exactly. And yet now we're seeing some really, really good examples of English sparkling and wine beyond that. How much potential really does the English wine industry have?
It has great potential. Its potential has been realized. One thing we have as a problem is that we are completely reliant on sparkling wine. Completely is a very strong word, but almost completely. 70-75% of what we make is sparkling wine. Some of them can rub shoulders with some of the great sparkling wines of the world, and that's fantastic. But there is an over-reliance, and that over-reliance means that we produce a lot now, over 20 million bottles in 23 of English sparkling wine. And are the British public really going to drink that much English sparkling wine when they've got Prosecco, they've got Cava, and they've got Champagne? And the answer, unfortunately, is no. So the exports need to ramp up, and they're very low. They're at 5%. So what you'll see with the UK in terms of potential is a shift in focus from sparkling wine production to still wine production. And that's going to be urban wineries that you'll find across London, for example, in other parts of the UK as well. But then also producers that are making brilliant, site expressive Chardonnays, Pinot Noirs, still wines, fun wines. There are skin contact, very much what's happening across parts of South Africa, as well as many other countries. But the change needs to happen, or... and you can use this one, the bubble will burst.
Finish your drink for that one. That's terrible.
I am a father, so I'm allowed those ones.
Also competing, you mentioned the Prosecco, the Cab Classique, the Cava. You've also got to compete with the delights of a warm, tepid pint, which is another great English delight. So much to compete with. Mm-hmm. If people come into your wine bar in London, are they going to find English wine? Are they looking for English wine? Are they happy to drink English wine?
Yeah, absolutely. People are, but the problem we have is one of volume. So people are going to come in and go, yeah, I'm going to try an English wine. And we're at that point, and it's a great point to be at. But are they going to then go away and say, do you know what? In the next 3 months, I need to buy a couple of cases of this to get me through it. It's going to form a feature of my lifestyle. And that's not where we're at. So we're in that transition phase. Hopefully we get to that point. But people come in, they really want to try the wines. They're very experimental. It's a mature market, the UK, right? So we have a lot of people that have some good knowledge, maybe trained by certain institutions that are found of it in the UK. But they have that foundation, they have that knowledge, and they have that drive for experimentation. So that's happening. But it is a question of volume. That's the point. People are still going to, if pushed, go and get a case of champagne or something like that rather, or a case of Cava or Prosecco rather than English sparkling wine.
I should be looking out for English wine when I come and visit the bar, which I'm looking forward to doing. Mm-hmm. I should also, though, be on the lookout for South African wine. How much will we find? How much does South African wine play a role, as you see it, in the UK today?
We, as a nation, have been big ambassadors for South African wine. It's been a great, a very good time for South African wine production to come into the UK. There's been a lot of great press, as I mentioned. There's a lot of good sentiment behind it, some great events, always well attended. And of course, suppliers, importers in the UK, there are many that are lining up to bring the exciting wines of South Africa into the UK. So there is good focus. I think there's still that kind of gap between premium wines and then a lot of just affordable, goodness knows how they make money on it from the production point of view, South African wine that will fuel a lot of the mass, you know, multiple grocers and big corporate wine bars, etc. So there's the middle ground, I think, that needs to be filled a bit more, and it's happening. But I think if you look at some of the case studies, certainly in my experience with my wine school, they are some of the most well-attended tastings that I put on. So I do a lot of events which would be themed Jimmy's Best Of, and it's often off the back of me going to places. This is the reason why I do them, so I can keep going on holidays. And I go to these places, bring back some wonderful wines, and, you know, it might be Jimmy's Best Of Georgia, you know, Jimmy's Best Of Jura, or whatever it may be. The South African ones, I often have to do several of them because they are so well attended. So there's a lot of love in the consumer market as well. So if you just think about all of those things, importers, press, and consumers are certainly on that wagon of enjoying great South African wine. There's a lot of good sentiment, but as always, there still needs to be more sold, I think.
And more sold at a slightly higher price point. That perception of South African wine, it certainly has changed from my experience getting over several times during the year. Mm. But there is still, I think, more education. So this is down to you to fix, to be done in terms
Sounds like a challenge.
And one I'm expecting you to meet to get people to realize that a 25, 30, 35, 40 quid bottle of South African wine can still be extraordinarily good value.
Mm. Absolutely. They need to, that's the connection. That's what a good communicator is about, certainly. Wines of South Africa do a great job at doing that as an overarching theme. And then people like me and other wine schools are certainly great ambassadors for it. Yeah, for sure.
For which we are enormously grateful.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure.
It's a 7 day a week journey, though, when you're in the wine business and immersed in it as much as you are. Are there times when even the great Jimmy Smith goes, you know what, I actually cannot take another glass of wine, give me a beer?
Mm. Yes, at the end of every tasting. I mean, that's the honest truth of it. Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm not just all about wine. It is a very sort of a fundamental part of my life, and I enjoy it. I really enjoy it. I'm not one of these people that, you know, I work on it and then I get back home and it's not a part of my life. It's a part of our dinner table. It's a part of our lifestyle, perhaps probably a bit too much, but I'm working on that. There's other stuff, right? So I love my beer, but I once almost got into doing a beer course. What I did actually, I sat the beer course and sat down, got past the first day, and I went, I don't want to ruin it for me. Because beer for me is just something which is just so relaxing. And there are people out there that will probably think the same about wine. And it's an absolute decision that you make if you want to take it that step further. It's the same for sake as well. I'm getting into that, but not on the real high academic level. I don't think I've got much space left in my small brain anyway. And I've got young children, as you know, so I've got at least a quarter of my brain taken up to Disney songs, which is...
They never leave. They never, ever leave. Do you want to build a snowman?
Oh, my God.
Do you want to drink a glass of wine? I'm sure yes, you do.
We should have done that. Oh, did you see? Sorry to interrupt. Did you see my the Pinotage 100 Association tasting? We did a sweet Caroline, but sweet Pinotage, and it's kind of broke the internet a bit. It's quite good.
And that just sums up so much of the joy that you bring to wine, which I love. But I wonder, in terms of your own joy, and we've got a glass here we're going to taste in a second, some Castilberg Chenin out of the Swartland. Can you ever just drink a glass of wine, or is the mind so conditioned that even while you're having a great conversation about who's going to win the Premier League this season, you're thinking, it's just a possible faint hint of cork taint in that. I think the winemaker was probably a Virgo. And are you that conditioned every time you have a glass of wine?
Well, what's the audience this goes out to? What can I say? I do switch off. I'm definitely one of those people, though, that when the glass is empty, my wine glass, I'm still swirling it. you've been in that position, right? You're like, it's just a natural habit, isn't it? In terms of assessing the wine, I can switch off. But every first glass that gets poured, you know, open the bottle, and that sound of a cork is just one of the greatest sounds in the world, isn't it?
It is.
And that's I'm definitely a flag flyer for all types of closures, but God, that sound. So when that happens and you pour out the wine, I'm going to assess it, but I get past that moment and then I'm very, very happy to kick back and relax. You know, we've got a lot of friends that are parents as well, and we need to relax because it's a challenging, you know, enjoyable life to be in. But yeah, I can switch off for sure.
All right, I don't believe you, but we'll pretend that's true.
Are you leading up to me just sort of downing this? Or
hello, thanks. What I do, what you do. We have the great Wine with Jimmy with us, so let's get this Wine with Jimmy. Give us an understanding, just the short version of the process, how you are picking up this glass of wine, picking something out of it, and what you get from a lovely South African Chenin.
Well, it's always good to have a decent wine glass. Holding it by the stem, it gives you good rhythm in the glass, I suppose. You can swirl it quite nicely.
Clockwise or anti-clockwise?
No, whatever you feel comfortable with. I don't mind. I can't do the other way, actually. I don't think I've ever done it. Oh, God, look at that. Yeah. I've never done that before, and I can't.
Changes the wine dramatically.
There you go. Yeah. That's something I've learned today. It's about, the appearance, and there's not much you can hugely learn about the appearance. Of course, if it's going to look more orangey, you're going to be start talking about things like skin contact or age, and that's where oxidation comes into play. But mostly, you know, we've got a white wine here, right? And this is, you're getting my very sort of relaxed version here. And you get oxygen into it, stick your nose in, and of course, you're looking to, you're looking for things that it reminds you of, and you are a very individual person with lots of your own experiences. So please don't say things that you have not even tried or experienced before. I always find it funny if someone's like, I get gooseberry, but there's, you know, they're from a country that doesn't naturally grow it and they don't know that compound. And I would stick to what you know. And if you don't know it, please go. And this is the great thing. When I was 18, 19, 20, I knew very little because came from a very traditional family. Remember, there was no wine on the table, no alcohol. And someone in class was like, I get orange blossom. And I was like, what? You know, and then someone would say something like lychee. I'd never had a lychee in my life. And I just went and bought all of these things or went to florists, you know, and I smelled these things. And that's a real great way of testing yourself. And a lot of people ask me, go, Jimmy, were you born with this with this nose of yours? I went, well, yes. I mean, it's there on my face. But were you born with your kind of... And I said, no, I don't think I'm a particularly great smeller or taster. I think I have some sensitivity, but you can train yourself just by experiencing. And that's really important. So I've gone off on a massive tangent here. That typically is what happens. My classes at school, by the way, if it says 2 hours, everyone knows it's 2.5 hours. It always happens that way.
Well, it's a very happy extra half.
Yeah. And, you know, you're sticking your nose in to look for things that you find in the wine. And it may be a whole list of things. And the most volatile compounds that come out of wine are floral and fruit-based, which are normally produced through fermentation. And they're the first thing you'll tend to experience, but not always. You might get a wine that's just shouting saline at you or oak, your human touch through it, and lead with those and build it around. Can you find the other things around that? But you don't need to be. I mean, if you're really just enjoying this wine, you can just say a few things. If you want to keep notes, you can scribble down a few things. if you want to be technical, that's when your medium minuses and medium pluses start to come into it. But smelling great. And South African Chenin, the seminal white grape, of course, it's had an illustrious history in South Africa. And it's one of the countries that, of course, does it fabulously in the world. And it rivals its home. That's the beauty about it. I love putting on tastings where you've got the Loire versus South Africa, because I, with all my selections, I honestly don't know when I go into the tasting who's going to win. Because it could be on the day or the night or whenever it may be, the morning maybe. It might be that one is showing better, but I've selected favorites, right? And I love that. And that's how good Chenin Blanc, amongst other great grape varieties, such as Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, a lot of the classics out here, can compete, rub shoulders, stand proud against other great nations of the world.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you. France definitely are improving and they're getting up there with South Africa.
Fantastic.
It's a country we drink plenty of, we're very proud of, and I think we see a lot of South African wine around the world very happily. But there is so much. There's wine coming from all sorts of different parts of the world. Does it ever get a little overwhelming that there is just so much wine? I'm supposed to be teaching people about stuff, but I've got no idea what a Bulgarian Nebbiolo actually tastes like, and I've got to try and teach it to the class.
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing I always say to a lot of my students when they start a fresh course with me, be it, you know, an introductory course or be it a professional one, is you're never going to know anything. No, my students are great. You're never going to know all there is to know about wine. It is so complex. And even just walking around and tasting with producers today, yesterday, etc., there's new crazy ideas that are happening all the time, which really pushes the envelope. And you have to think about that. It might be learning about new techniques with stems, you know, introducing carbonic maceration into white wines and all these different processes that will then change the profile of those wines. South Africa has a great younger generation of winemakers that have learnt with some of the best, you know, great diversity coming through here now with different colors, with say women and men. And it's fantastic, this amount of like experimentation that's coming out of the country. Really, really fantastic, which you probably wouldn't get as much in some other places in the world, not naming any names, sometimes France. But it's real experimentation. And I absolutely love that, because coming back to the point that you were asking, once again, another tangent, and I apologize about that. It's really beautiful to try and understand those wines through those techniques, and it pushes your own decisions, and you're never going to know it all. And you mentioned Bulgarian Nebbiolo. Yes, those kind of
an underrated category, I've always felt.
Yes, for sure. But I just finished, for instance, on Wine with Jimmy, a series on wines of Armenia. Right. And I've been there once, but the welcome was fantastic. I've done a Wines of Georgia course, which are just fantastic for all of my followers to get to grips, because there's no education out there in the market for these. So that's something I'm really starting to focus on more. So really pushing myself to know more about these other places so then I can hopefully connect that to other people around the world.
Well, possibly this will inspire you. We have a new Dan Really Likes Wine series, very similar. You're doing the wines of Georgia, the wines of Armenia. I'm going to be doing the wines of Barbados, the wines of the Maldives, the wines of the Seychelles. Mm-hmm. I've got no idea if any of them have vineyards, but I'm headed there nonetheless. It speaks to this sense of adventure that wine gives us, that it's a journey that will never end, and we'll get some way down the road eventually, and we'll stop and take wrong turns and meander wherever we go, but it never stops delivering interest. Absolutely. And joy and delight.
Absolutely. And that's the great thing about it. I love to come back to the point that wine is so multidiscipline, which is fantastic. And what we mean by that, you can find something in wine that you will love, and hopefully many things in wine that you will love. The multidiscipline nature is fantastic. Yes, it's social, right? Fundamentally, it's social. It's a wine that would wine comes from, you know, Mesopotamia. It would bring people together on the spice route through history. You know, it's gone into religion as the blood of Christ, and it's utilized across the world as social occasions, families, you know, Mediterranean, the Georgians with their big feasts, their supras, for example. And that's the social element. But then you've got all the way back to production, soils and geology. So you can get really sort of down to earth about it. You can get into geography, for example, human and physical. You can go to biology, the making of the wine and chemistry, and the list goes on, right? If you're a romantic, a scientific mind, you should be able to find something. And that's a speech that I've honed for the last 20 years. I feel like I'm a stand-up comedian who does the same routine. Because I would go into training for big hotel groups, right, where they put people on those courses who don't want to be there, right? And you say, all right, in the room, put your hands up. Who doesn't like wine? There's about half the group who puts their hands up. So I like to do a speech like that saying, look, you should come away from this with a qualification, hopefully, but with something that will interest you. And it might be marketing and sales, you know, or that long list I mentioned, or just that you love a glass of wine and you want to learn more about it.
And sometimes it really is important to keep it as simple as that.
As I'm not sure if that was simple.
Well, just enjoying what's in the
box. The last point. Yes. Yeah, for sure.
Remember that we're now 9 hours into recording. And if you're listening, we've edited this down. At one point, I actually went up and had lunch while Jimmy was finishing off. I want to wrap up with a version of the question we hate that we get all the time, which is, what's your favorite wine? But for me, it's not so much the favorite wine, but the favorite wine experience that I've had. And you talk earlier about that Italian wine while working as a waiter, and these are the ones that define us. And while I let you sift through the memory bank of the millions you've had, I think of things like sitting on the first floor of Rucamelen outside of Mendoza with a 5-course steak tasting menu, drinking Malbec, looking out over the vineyards and up to the Andes. Mm-hmm. Or I think about sitting in my wife's Greek family village as her Uncle Yuri attempted to kill me with homemade wine he'd made in a plastic oil drum and served in a Fanta barrel. These are the memories we have of wine are generally so much more than just about a glass. It's the people, it's the place, it's the context. So what are one or two of those that, when you look back across this incredible career that you've had, have the richness and the vibrancy and the fondness to them?
Yeah, I think I have two that just came to mind as you were going through your speech, actually, there, Dan. I think that was one of, almost as long as mine. I have two. I have one which is definitely about people and about place and about feeling. Then I have one which was more about comedy and really about a recreation of a moment. So let me go into those. The first one would be that I keep gravitating back to what is called the cradle of wine. So I teach in Georgia. I teach in Tbilisi. I go there annually, sometimes biannually. And I love going back there. Absolutely love it. The warmth of that country is amazing. And I'm not talking about climatically, though it is warm. The warmth of the people is fantastic. Their hospitality is off the charts. South Africa has great hospitality as well, but Georgians take it a step further. You know, they will be there to pick you up at the airport, even if you're loosely connected to a hotel or something like that. There, you'll be welcomed into their homes immediately, where you will go through something like a supra, which means tablecloth, and they call it, it's a big feast, and they call it tablecloth because you're not allowed to see the tablecloth with all the food and the wine that's on it. And then there are speeches. And those speeches will include you, you know, and you might be a new friend, you might be old friends, but there are what's called a tamada, a toast maker that makes these amazing speeches. So for me, it's not about a moment in time for that point. It's about a series of feelings when I go there, where it's wine is a part of bringing people together, drinking people's wine that they have made and toiled over, maybe is the right word, but they've put their energy and their life and their passion into it. And then everything around that, the connections, the food, that for me is absolutely seminal. It's fantastic. The second one I want to mention is a bit more of a banter-based one. Banter, if you don't know, is just a bit of fun. And is, I did a tasting of Grand Cru Classé, and we had some leftover of Cheval Blanc 61. And we found the nearest McDonald's, and went and recreated the sideways scene of having a top Grand Cru Classe Bordeaux. This is just me and the girl I was living with at the time. And we just had burgers and really greasy burgers with a glass of that. But of course, underneath the table in a McDonald's, pouring it out in a plastic cup sort of job. And I think maybe, you know, the first point of the Georgian side of things, I think that's just a beautiful feeling. But also, let's not take ourselves too seriously. Let's do things like that sideways moment, you know. Let's go and have some fun around wine and, you know, let's not take it too seriously all the time.
And I think that's an absolutely perfect note to wrap up on, because you have a very serious job and you're very serious about wine, but you talk about it in a way that is very different to that. You make it fun. You make it enjoyable.
Thank you.
And we have to do. If we're going to sustain our industry and let it grow, we need to let more people into the party. And if we keep them out with our language and with our barriers, then that won't happen. And the reason it will is people like yourself. So you're doing a fantastic job. And I think you were... the Drinks Man of the Millennium, was that right? The latest award you've got? A well-deserved one. And thank you also for being such a great friend of South Africa and South African wine. You've been a rock star in Cape Town this week. I queued for just under an hour to get a selfie two nights ago, and that was one of the shorter ones. But I know how much you've enjoyed it, how much you've enjoyed your time here, and I know we'll be seeing plenty more of you. But until then, thanks for being out here. Thanks for being a wine champion, a South African wine champion. And I shall look forward to seeing a couple of bottles of English and otherwise only South African wine at your wine bar when I drop in later this year.
Thank you very much. This has been fantastic. I would like to say just quickly that it's very easy to be an ambassador for this country. The people and the wines make it very easy. So I'm more than happy to be so. So thank you.
All right. Consider your contract extended. Jimmy Smith is one of the great voices of modern wine. Wine with Jimmy. If you haven't engaged with it before, jump online. It will change your wine life. He's got wine coming out of England. That's one to look out for as well. And a great bar. And remember, if you get to his wine bar in London, mention you're a friend of Dan Really Likes Wine and you'll never pay for a thing. A great guest on Dan Really Likes Wine. Not for the last time, I hope. Jimmy Smith joining us this week.